Welcome to Windows Azure Conf. I am excited to be here with you this morning. Today we are going to talk about, in this session, security and compliance with Windows Azure and public clouds. So it's the elephant in the room usually. We often don't talk about it, but there are real concerns. And so today we're going to talk about how to address some of those, what you should be looking for, and how to deal with it with Windows Azure. So my name is Eric Boyd. I am from Chicago. I run a company called ResponsiveX. ResponsiveX is a consulting company in Chicago. We have offices in Milwaukee, and we are completely focused on building web, mobile, and client apps around Windows Azure and public cloud. You can check us out. You can also see my blog and tweet on Twitter as well. Our agenda for today is pretty simple. We're going to talk about security and compliance. We're going to talk about the challenges, the problem that you think about when it's public cloud, and cloud computing in general, and security and compliance. We're going to drill into the steps that we can take to make our public cloud environment more secure and to deal with data that we may not want to expose in the public cloud. And then at the end, we'll answer some questions. Feel free during this session to submit your questions. As they come up, I'll answer them the best I can, and otherwise, well, I'll reserve some time at the end to answer those. So public cloud, we've probably seen this slide a number of times before, but when we think about public cloud, we start off thinking about this. We think about our traditional data centers. So on this left-hand side, we have the entire stack in our data center behind our walls, closed in our firewalls. Our security and our ops guys manage this all the way from networking all the way up through our apps and our data. When we start thinking about public cloud, however, we move some of that out of our data center elsewhere. So when we look at infrastructure as a service, for example, like Windows Azure Virtual Machines, we take a look at that stack above virtualization, and that's ours to manage out in the public cloud. And so all the rest of that beneath that is managed by the vendor. When we move farther to platform as a service, like Windows Azure Cloud Services, the only thing we worry about is our apps and our data. And at the far end, software as a service, which we won't get into today, we don't worry about any of that. It's all managed by a vendor. So from a return on investment perspective, from a business perspective, platform as a service makes a ton of sense, and infrastructure service is makes good sense as well if we can't just move our apps and our data. But the problem is, from a security and a compliance perspective, we are moving the most valuable things of our business out to the public cloud and into someone else's hands, into someone else's data center. So how do we deal with that? So today we're going to talk about FUD. We're going to talk about fear, uncertainty, and doubts. This is the elephant in the room. This is generally the thing we avoid when we're talking about public cloud, but today we're going to drill right into it and talk about how to deal with the things that cause fear, uncertainty, and doubt when we're dealing with public cloud. This is Windows Azure. Windows Azure is a big surface area. We have a lot of services. At the core, we have compute and storage, and then built on top of that, we have a ton of application-level services that we can leverage in our apps. But we have to deal with security and think about security as we're building out our apps. So Windows Azure, from a data center perspective, is secure by design. What is provided to us by Microsoft is secure. So there's isolation in the hypervisor for us from other tenants in this multi-tenant cloud environment. And there's all sorts of security processes that happen for the physical data center as well. But what we have to worry about is our apps. So when we're choosing a public cloud vendor, a couple of things that we have to think about right up front in regards to security in the platform. We want to choose a trusted vendor. Right off the bat, we want to think about an established vendor, a vendor that has good service delivery, a vendor that's good fit for us, and a vendor that provides openness. And what do I mean by openness? These next three links are pretty important in terms of openness and security and compliance. Now, the first link, let's just drill into this. This is the Windows Azure Trust Center and compliance, the compliance area specifically on WindowsAzure.com. This provides us with information about certifications that are already in place from these security and compliance certification organizations for Windows Azure. So you can see ISO 27001. You can see HIPAA as well on this list. So this is important for us as we're thinking about compliance and security. What is in place in the data center for the services and their most fundamental, like raw format for us from a compliance perspective? So that is a link off of the Trust Center. The Trust Center has a lot of information about security, privacy, compliance, a lot of good information as we're working with our compliance folks and our security folks and explaining what Windows Azure provides for us. One more organization is the Cloud Security Alliance. CSA also provides some information. They provide a CCM, a cloud matrix that basically has a questionnaire or a survey that cloud vendors respond to and provide. This is how we meet this specific criteria. This is how we meet this specific criteria. And so the Cloud Security Alliance has built that questionnaire out. Microsoft has populated all that information for Windows Azure, and you can go download that from cloudsecurityalliance.org. And that's part of this deck as well. You can see it afterwards as well. So there are those links. Flip back real quick. So when we're thinking about security, we should start off thinking about our fortress, what's behind our walls. So when we deploy to the public cloud, we have a bigger fortress. Like, that is our fortress we have to secure. So let's start thinking about our secrets. We have a lot of secrets that we have to secure. Passwords, keys, certificates, all sorts of secrets that we need to make sure are secure when we're leveraging public cloud or any infrastructure for that matter. This doesn't just apply to public cloud. So how do we make sure that those are secure? Oftentimes what I see in our customers is a split between dev and the ops folks, the folks that manage the production environments. That makes perfect sense. That helps with security. It's a Sarbanes-Oxley criteria usually. And so you should make sure that not everybody has those secrets. Don't distribute those secrets. But you need to protect those secrets and not distribute them in your app as well. We want to reduce our attack area. So things in Windows Azure, for example. We want to disable RDP if we can. If we don't need RDP, remote desktop access into our instances, into our VMs, then disable that. We want to make sure we configure our SQL database firewall appropriately. Make sure we have it as tight as possible. And lastly, we can configure IIS's IP security. That's just built into IIS, and we can configure it through configuration in webconfig to do IP security rules and say only allow traffic from this IP address to this website. So if we're building an app that should be accessed only by our internal HR department, for example, or something along those lines, then we can make sure that only we have access from our corporate network, and then it's not exposed to the outside world. We want to harden the gate. So we've protected the secrets. We've reduced that attack area. So our fortress is getting more and more secure. But that gate itself becomes brittle over time. So we need to rotate those secrets. A secret won't maintain a secret forever, even if we protect them. Oftentimes, attacks come from inside, or breaches occur inside our companies. And so we want to rotate those secrets out. Oftentimes, when people leave, we have a policy for dealing with key rotation and password rotation and that sort of thing. So here's a list of secrets in Azure that I can come up with. There are a lot of secrets in Windows Azure that we have to maintain and be secure with. Starting off with the Live ID just to authenticate into Windows Azure, into the Windows Azure Management Portal. We want to make sure that we secure that up and don't distribute that to the world. We want to make sure we have a practice and a policy for changing that password regularly. Changing that password when people leave our organizations, because that is kind of the entry point into the whole system. If I can get access to the management portal, I can get access to a lot of things. So we need to secure that up. Second, our management certificates, the certificates we use for deployments. So if we have deployments occurring via scripts, PowerShell scripts or something like that, or our CI boxes are pushing deployments out, or we have a deployment through System Center, that sort of thing. We have these management certificates that are used for authentication to allow us to upload our packages to Azure, that allow us to use the management REST API. So we need to secure those up as well. We need to think about how we can rotate those on a frequent basis, just like our Live ID and our passwords. Our storage accounts. Our storage accounts also have keys. The good news with storage accounts is we have two keys for a storage account. We have a primary and a secondary key. we can use those keys and rotate them out intelligently, so we can have a primary key that we issue and our apps use to connect back into our storage accounts, accessing blob storage, table storage, our queues. And then at some point we can say, you know what, we want to rotate this key out, we want to expire this key, so let's change our apps to use the secondary key, and we can basically have an update in place, a rolling update that's not that won't cause downtime. So we can just redeploy our apps with a new key, reconfigure that, and send those apps up to Azure. And at the point where all of our apps are moved over to the new key, the secondary key, then we can regenerate the primary key. And then we can just keep going back and forth and roll those keys out and regenerate those keys over time. SQL database username and passwords. We often have these in connection strings in our web configs and our app configs. And so we need to think about how we can secure those up. We can encrypt those and have some logic that would decrypt them in our applications before we pass them into our data access layers. That probably makes a lot of sense. There's nothing out of the box for us to do that today, but somehow we need to think about securing up those username and passwords. Access Control Service. If you're using ACS today for federated identity, we have a couple of things in ACS that we have to worry about. So we have management credentials for getting into the ACS management portal, different from the Windows Azure management portal's Live ID. We have to think about how we secure that up. We need to think about adding people to that list, managing that list carefully. If we have service accounts that we're using for that list, same thing for Live IDs, how do we roll those out? Inside of ACS, we have keys, certificates, service identities, same kinds of things. We can build in mechanisms inside of ACS to roll these keys and build in a couple, just like we do with storage accounts. So we can say, let's use this one without causing any downtime. Here's another key insert that we can roll through and update over time instead of making a big change that incurs downtime. Remote desktop. So we talked about, ideally we would turn remote desktop off if we don't need it. It's just another piece of surface that's vulnerable to attack if we don't really need it. So disable as many services as you possibly can, that sort of mentality. With remote desktop, we have two secrets. We have a certificate that handles the encryption of the password when we authenticate, and then we also have the password itself. So we need to make sure we keep those two both secure. This seems pretty obvious, but common sense isn't all that common. This is one of those things that we constantly need to be thinking about. Build long, strong passwords. You can, and you should. It's just a way to harden up your security and harden up the gate. So there are passwords throughout. By default, like the symmetric keys are strong passwords. But if we are building our own password, like remote desktop access, or the Windows Live ID's password for accessing the management portal, make sure that those are strong. So again, this seems like common sense, but it's not all that common. And I've seen some pretty weak passwords in the wild. So we talked about the distribution of secrets. You really should limit this. Don't distribute all of these secrets to everybody. Don't distribute these secrets to your entire engineering organization if they don't need access. So again, it's just providing the minimal set of access that's really necessary. So if you have DevOps folks or Ops folks that need access to the Azure environment, great, give them access. Keep track of who has access to the environment so that you know where the vulnerabilities lie. But don't distribute the secrets widely. Keep them protected. They are secret. They should be protected. So again, we reduce the attack area, disable remote desktop, configure the SQL database firewall, enable IP security in IIS if possible, and configure appropriate expiration policies. So we have things like shared access signatures that have policies for expiration. We have expiration policies throughout the platform, throughout Windows Azure, in different services. Configure those expiration policies wisely. Don't just configure them to the max because it's convenient. It is convenient, but it's not good for security. So let's take a look at remote desktop. So in our apps, what we often do is, let's say we deploy from Visual Studio. I have this little checkbox for remote desktop. Oftentimes we check that in dev environments, and it makes sense. It's easy to connect into a VM to debug issues, but in production we really don't want to check that. We want to have that disabled. You can look inside of the service def. This is a cloud service inside of Visual Studio. Inside the service def, you see I have these remote access modules pulled in. We don't really want that when we deploy to production. So you want to get rid of those out of your service def, and as a result, you want to get rid of them in your CS configs as well. If I browse over to the portal, this is the Windows Azure portal, and I have something odd going on with SQL. If I go to my SQL databases, I don't have any right now set up, but I do have a server here. If I drill into that and I say configure, inside the management portal, we can configure rules for IP access to our SQL server, to our SQL databases in Windows Azure. And so we can say access from channel 9. We see our current IP right up above. I can take that and just copy and paste it in, give this IP address access, and then now I will have access to our SQL database. So by default, we want this to be as secure as possible, and so there is no access to our SQL database, and we can add in access pretty easily. But what we want to avoid doing, if at all possible, is these big broad range of access in the IP filters. You know, we could get crazy here and say, let's just enable everything in this entire IP block, and that just doesn't make a lot of sense. Unless our scenario really calls for it, we want to make the security as tight as possible. All right. One more thing to look at while we're in here. If we go to our storage accounts, you'll see we have keys inside of our storage accounts. I'm not going to pop that up because I will show the world my keys, but we have two keys in there. Those keys we can rotate out, and that's where we would do that. And we should do that regularly. So another thing that we should do when we're thinking about security and compliance, we should secure our communication channels. We want to prevent leaks. We want to prevent people from sniffing our traffic. And so we would enable SSL. Inside of Windows Azure, all of the internal communication occurs over SSL. So when we're thinking about a big public cloud platform, a big public cloud vendor like Windows Azure, with multiple tenants in a data center, you heard Scott this morning say there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of servers in these data centers. Along with that comes lots and lots of customers and tenants. We don't want to have the ability for people to even sniff our traffic internally inside these data centers, other tenants, or even Microsoft. So all of the traffic is secured via SSL inside the data center. There's isolation in the hypervisor for all of our tenants inside the data center as well. So that's handled for us in our app. We need to make sure that those channels are secure as well. So our web services that we would create, we want to make sure that we are exposing those over SSL. Any communication that should be secure, whether it's authentication from users, whatever that may be in our application, we want to make sure those tunnels are secure and encrypted with SSL, and it's really easy to do in Windows Azure. So in Windows Azure, I'll go back to my app. This is my cloud service. I can add certificates in. So if we have an SSL certificate, I can say add a certificate, SSL cert. Go find my cert, and it will look at my certs that I have inside of my certificate store on my local machine, and I can say, let's just grab this cert, add it in, and now we have a cert to use for SSL. I'm going to cancel that. Encrypting data at rest. One of the concerns that we have from a compliance perspective is if we have data that is sensitive, maybe it's patient data for healthcare and HIPAA, maybe it's PCI data, for example, and we have that in our data center, in Windows Azure, how do we ensure that that data is secure at rest? We've dealt with communication channels, but we also need to secure the data when it's stored in storage. So one of the ways we would do that is encrypt that data before we store it. So even if someone were to get to our service, even if someone were to be looking at our drive, the bits on our drive, that data would be encrypted and they couldn't see the bits in our drive in storage, for example. And we will talk about encryption and demo that towards the end. So we have sensitive data in our businesses. We're talking about moving stuff to the public cloud. We have sensitive data like customer data, but we have sensitive data like PCI data and credit cards. We have patient data, HIPAA data that's sensitive from a compliance perspective. All of those things we have to secure. We're bound to, we're obligated to secure that data from regulatory concerns, regulatory organizations. We have intellectual property. Even if we don't have compliance issues, let's say we don't fall into the HIPAA category. Let's say we aren't storing credit cards and we don't have PCI data to worry about. We have intellectual property that's critical for our business. We have algorithms and business processes that oftentimes people are concerned about. How do we secure that sort of stuff? I don't want to just give away my source code and my intellectual property. I don't want to put that up into the public cloud because it is sensitive. Maybe the data is sensitive. Maybe we have trade secrets in our data. Maybe it's competitive data, strategic data, customers that really are strategic, projects, that sort of data that we're storing. How do we make sure that that's kept secret? One of the ways we can do that is keep that close to us. So let's not put that in the public cloud. Let's keep that in our data center. And I work with various customers doing all sorts of things. And one of the things that I've seen lately is keeping that PCI data in a data center that is secure, that is certified, it's controlled, and then bridging that to the public cloud, so building a hybrid cloud. So I put the rest of my application that isn't sensitive, I put that out in Windows Azure, I put that out into the public cloud, and I keep that sensitive data in a data center that is PCI compliant, that's been certified, that I know is trusted and safe and I don't have to worry about. And so we'll talk about how we can do that. When we talk about hybrid clouds, what we're really talking about is this. So again, putting my information, my application out in Windows Azure, whatever that may be, but taking that sensitive data and keeping it on premise. So somehow I have to tie those two together. They have to communicate together. And I can do that in various ways, and we'll talk about various ways that we can do that, but we'll focus in on one application level way that we can bridge both our on-premise and our Windows Azure public cloud. So let's go look at that. In Windows Azure, we have a service called Service Bus. So I have built two solutions inside of Visual Studio. Inside of my solutions, I have Service Bus messaging occurring. So with Service Bus, there are a couple of ways we can communicate. We have brokered messaging, which think of like message queuing. So we take a message, put it on a queue, somebody else is listening and subscribing to that queue and taking messages off of that queue. The queues are extremely robust. I can have things like topics along with those queues, and people can subscribe to just topics they care about. So think about ESB sort of concepts, Enterprise Service Bus ideas, where I can just filter for topics that I care about as an endpoint listening to this queue. And that's one way to deal with messaging between the public cloud and your private cloud or your on-premise data center. And that's a good option, but if your data is extremely sensitive and you don't want it stored anywhere in the pipeline, maybe you just want to bridge the two, the public cloud and the private cloud, there's also an option for relay messaging. So instead of storing messages on a queue, we basically just pump them through a relay, and our internal data center can have a service listening, connecting basically up into the cloud saying, I want to accept messages. And our public cloud can say, I want to publish messages to this endpoint, and it will just relay through Windows Azure and not store them in queues. So let's take a look at how this works. So right here I have a console application. It's very simple. I'm going to first open up our app config. In our app config, we have brought in a few things that are unique. First off, we have references to Microsoft.ServiceBus, which ships with the Windows Azure SDK. With that reference, we have this app setting that gets created for us, which is a connection string to the service bus. I'll flip over to the management portal and go drill into service bus. And you'll see I've created this service bus namespace already, hybrid relay. And I have a relay. I don't have a relay connected to the service bus, but when we connect up, you will see it show up right here. So I have this endpoint to that hybrid relay. Along with that, I have some secrets. So we talked about securing these secrets. I've hidden this one from you. This is a copy of this app config with this secret removed. But I basically have a name and a value here. So I have an issuer that's a secret, and then the secret value, which is a symmetric key for that issuer. So that's my authentication scheme. I'm creating a WCF service here. And so when I create this WCF service, I am adding in a bunch of Microsoft.ServiceBus extensions for behaviors and bindings to extend authentication for ServiceBus. The last thing I have here, which is not extremely unique, is a connection string to a data model, so an EF data model. I'm just using LocalDB in SQL Server, but I have Northwind sitting here. So there's my Northwind data model. I'm going to go crack open my WCF service. So it's very simple, a very typical WCF service. I have an interface and a contract. That's my customer contract. I want to get customers, and I want to get customers by ID. And I have a customer as well. That's inside of my Northwind data model. And then I have a service. So that service says, from my Northwind data model, grab some customers. So get the top 10 customers and return them. And then get customers by ID. So nothing terribly complex here. This is all just standard .NET sort of concepts. Now what I'm doing is hosting this up in a console app. In the console app, we will see the requests that come into this service. And so in my main of my console app, I have some stuff that's special. So the first thing I'm doing is I'm going out and grabbing that connection string from our app config. And I'm saying, populate, use the Cloud Configuration Manager, which the Cloud Configuration Manager is new. And it takes a setting, and it goes and looks in our app config, web config, or our CS config, depending on what our app is. And it will pull back that setting. So if it's a cloud service, then it will look and look first in the CS config. From that connection string, I'm saying I want a service bus namespace. So using that connection string, create a namespace client. That will come with an address, so it'll parse that connection string out for me and grab the address. I'm going to be connecting specifically to this customer on the address. And then I'm gonna create a host. So I'm gonna host up this service. So we are connecting up using service bus, posting an endpoint to service bus. I'm authenticating with that the secret issuer and value, the key value. That's what comes back in my token provider when I create this namespace client. I add the behavior for security. And I host up the endpoint, and I open that up. So very similar to how we would normally self-host a service, a WCF service, except I have a few specific Windows Azure service bus concepts built in here. I then go out and do some stuff to validate that the database exists, but that's not extremely critical. So let's host up our endpoint. So we are connecting out to Windows Azure right now. That's our URL, it's our service address, which is sitting out in service bus, our hybrid relay, and then customer is the path. So if I go back to Windows Azure and relays now where it was empty, you'll see I have customer now. And I have one connection to that. I have one listener. So let's build the other side of that. So that is my listener that's accepting requests. So think about that as my service that's sitting on premise. Maybe it's sitting out in front of my PCI data. Maybe it's sitting out in front of just secrets that I don't want to expose to the world, an algorithm, some sort of computation that happens. I'm keeping that on premise and I'm just hosting up a service. Now, I'm not actually hosting up an endpoint to the world for my data center. So I'm not exposing my data center. It's not public. What I'm doing is from my data center, I'm saying connect up to service bus via HTTP and open a connection over port 80. HTTP happens to be bidirectional. And so what happens is they keep the connection alive. Service bus keeps the connection alive back to my data center and uses that to send data back down. But I haven't opened any ports in my firewall. My service is still sending on my internal private network, and I'm not exposed to any of that. So now let's go build a client to send messages to that, like in the public cloud. So I have a project, a solution that has a web project and a cloud project, a cloud service. My web project is a pretty simple MVC app. I have a few things that are specific here as well. So I have the same extensions inside of this project that augment WCF, augment WCF behaviors and bindings with service bus extensions. And then I have a client section as well in my service model saying, there's an endpoint that I need to connect to. And so I've configured that as well. If I go back to my app, I have a controller for customers. And I have my customers from Northwind as well in my data model. So very similar to what I had on premise. So let me just launch this real quickly and show you what this does. So I'm launching this in the emulator. I'm going to side by side show my client that's running on premise. So they're both running on premise. What's on the right-hand side is basically a simulation of what would be in the public cloud. So maybe I need to get customer data. In this case, it's customer data. It could be I want to send PCI data across. It could be I want to send patient data or trade secrets across. And then this is, on the left-hand side, a console app that represents my service on-premise. So if I go drill into customers, for example, you will see a request that goes from my local machine in the emulator, so the public cloud, up to service bus, and then it comes back down to my private cloud and gets a customer's list from my database. So this is all happening locally on my box. The customers are all on my box. Nothing is out in the public cloud. I can drill into this and see the customer data as well. And you'll see on the left-hand side, again, in that console app, a request to get customer by ID. I could keep doing this, and you'll see requests come in via service bus back down to my local machine. Now, we can have some fun with this, and I have deployed this out to Azure. And so if I go to hybridrelay.cloudapp.net, this is actually running in Windows Azure. I'm not going to deploy it for the sake of time because it will take about 10 minutes to do so. So I've already baked this and deployed it out to Windows Azure, and you'll see I see that same request coming in. So if you guys go browse this, you will see these requests coming in the console. So at some point I will have to kill it because you will kill my local box and my local SQL server. But it's a little fun test of you can actually hit my local box, which is not exposing any endpoints to the outside world. It's just connecting back up to service bus and the public cloud is connecting back in. So let's play with that for a minute. You see my request coming through. I'll leave that up for a little bit until you guys kill my machine. There we go. So requests are coming through and that's all coming in from the outside world back to my box. Now, at some point, you're likely to kill my machine. One of the things that I didn't do here is deal with faults. So there's a session going on right now. Mihai is giving a session in the other studio about dealing with faults in Windows Azure. So if you're watching this and eventually you kill my box and you think, well, how do I deal with that? You'll want to check out Mihai's session later and see how to deal with faults in Windows Azure. All right, so I'm going to kill this before my box goes down. When I kill that console app over in Azure, we should see that connection, that relay disappear in the Azure Management Portal. And I'm refreshing here. Try that again. All right, well, while that's loading, so we looked at how to deal with this hybrid cloud scenario from an application level perspective. So we've created a WCF service on-premise. We didn't expose it to the outside world. It's sitting inside our firewall, not even in a DMZ. In this case, it's sitting on my box. I'm not exposing anything to the outside world. I have no public IPs on this box. And we've bridged that with the public cloud. So again, if I have sensitive data sitting in my environment that I don't want to expose, I don't want to store that data in SQL database or Windows Azure Storage, for example, because I just can't let that leave my my environment, or maybe it's the data center just doesn't have the right compliance for me and I can't move that out to Windows Azure from a compliance perspective, I can bridge that. So I leave that on-premise, I build a relay that tunnels back into my data center, gets that data, presents it on screen, that sort of thing, or sends data in if I'm taking credit cards, pushing that data in, that sort of workflow and pattern. I secure the transport. In my demo, I'm not using SSL. It would be pretty simple for me to add an SSL cert in, a self-signed cert on my box, for example, and use that as well, and secure the tunnels. I would want to do that, otherwise I'm bringing that data out of my internal data center, my private cloud, where I'm compliant to the outside world, not over SSL. So I would want to secure those channels up like we had discussed. But that is one way to deal with keeping those internal and private, and at an application layer using service bus relays to bridge on-premise and in public cloud. There are a few other ways. So this is the one we looked at. I can synchronize data. If it's okay for me to push my data out to the public cloud, for example, and I just need to integrate, I can use SQL Data Sync, for example, to synchronize data to Windows Azure, to Windows Azure SQL database, and bridge it that way. So we're not really bridging the two clouds. We're not communicating back and forth in real time. We're synchronizing data. So maybe I have reference data that I need to push out to Windows Azure, changes periodically, but not terribly often. And so I just push that out using SQL Azure Data Sync. The other options that I have are doing it from a network perspective. So we've talked about service bus from an application layer, but I could also do it from a networking perspective. And I have two options for that. I have Windows Azure Connect, which is a point-to-point, machine-to-machine VPN, basically. So I have an agent that lives on my client, my server's on-premise, and I have connectivity back to my VMs, my cloud services running in Windows Azure. Now, it's point-to-point. There are reasons why that might make sense for me. I just want a point-to-point connection from one machine to Windows Azure. But I also may have scenarios where I need more than point-to-point, or I don't want to manage agents across 100 servers. In that scenario, there is a relatively new feature called virtual networks. It's in preview. But I can basically build at the networking layer, I can build a VPN, a tunnel between Windows Azure and my routers of my network. And so that's a new feature that you'll find in the new portal. It is in preview, but that helps build that hybrid cloud scenario for a number of different scenarios. So maybe it's not that I have WCF services that I want to expose, or maybe I don't want to build up new WCF services. Maybe I want to bridge the network and just let Windows Azure, the public cloud, connect into my network and query my SQL database using port 1433, for example. Or maybe I want to expose AD on-premise to Windows Azure, and so I can use virtual networks to do that. So in summary, Windows Azure provides us a secure cloud platform. We have out-of-the-box security built in. The hypervisor has isolation from other tenants. You get encrypted tunnels and communication inside the data center. But the second point is you must take responsibility for securing the application. You have to protect your secrets. You have to build in application layer security. If you have compliance issues like PCI, then you might want to look at hybrid clouds. And you might want to keep that data on-premise in a data center that is certified and compliant for your compliant scenario, and bridge the two with something like Windows Azure Service Bus or Virtual Networks or Windows Azure Connect. One more thing that we didn't look at that I built in is encryption. We talked about encryption for data at rest. In Windows Azure, I'm going to go back to my cloud service that's running in Windows Azure. I have this certificates tab. Now you'll see that I've uploaded already a certificate for cryptography. So that is an X509 cert that I'm going to use with a public and private key there. I'm going to use for encrypting and decrypting data in Windows Azure. So one of the things that I've added in, let's flip back over here to my web app. So this is my customer details view. I've added in two properties. I've built a partial class on top of those Northwind data model classes. that have an encrypted and a decrypted contact name. So I've taken that security certificate, and let's go view that, how we do that. So there's my partial customer class. I've got a method here that says find certificate. So I go out to an X509 store by certificate name, and I say, here's the where the store is located. Here's the name of the store and the location of the store. Go out and grab this certificate that I'm going to use for cryptography. And then I have two methods for encrypting and decrypting the data. Now, when we're dealing with data at rest and we need to have that data secure, then we have to use something like an X509 certificate or some sort of algorithm to encrypt and decrypt that data with public keys, private keys. So I have created a few properties here. I have an encrypted contact name where I say, go find this cryptography certificate in my store on the local machine. Encrypt that the contact name using that certificate. I also have a decryption method to prove to you that we can go both ways. So we take the same certificate and we say decrypt the previous encrypted contact name. So I'm going to spin up Service Bus again. I'm going to spin up my endpoint rather. And then I'm also going to spin up the web app. And I faulted. I don't have a connection running. Let's see if we can do this again. Well, I may not be able to show you. Doesn't appear to be running. So I have a demo fail, and had we had this launched up, we would have seen in our customer data two additional lines that we just added in, one for encrypting the data for the customer name, and then a following decryption of that data. I'm not sure what's going on with my demo, but that's the way it works sometimes. So I guess with that, I will just open it up for questions. Well, thank you all for joining Windows Azure Conf today. If there are any questions, feel free to ping me on Twitter or hit my blog, and you can send me an email there as well. And tune in and see all the other sessions throughout the rest of the day. Thanks.